views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
People Radio.
We're back.
Yeah, Erin's back. Yay! Thank you so much to Ruth Angel for sitting in last week. She was awesome. She was able to plug right in because she's got her wonderful radio show on Saturday mornings with Kurt Largent. So a shout out to Ruth. Thank you so much.
And it's funny. She kind of sounds like us, too.
She does. She does.
I thought, wow, you and I kind of sound alike. And then she was on. I'm like...
Yeah, super smart lady. Great insight. Great comments.
Well, I didn't think that's why she sounded like us.
Yeah, no, that's
her
not
her voice
why.
Sounded like us.
Yeah,
she did sound super smart.
Fit right in.
Ruth is a kindred spirit.
Yes, she is. It was great to have her on. Welcome back, Erin.
Yes, it's great to have you back, Erin.
Well, you know, here we're all fine. Bob doesn't have the flu.
My foot's not broken anymore.
Yeah.
And for all those young people out there listening, yes, we are middle-aged.
Yeah, it's gonna suck.
Yeah. They say that, anyway, I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to go there. So, you know, we're going to kind of cut to the chase this morning, but do go to wethepeopleradio.us, jump on the chat room, follow us along on our webpage. You can find out everything about today's guests right there on that page, and that gives you an opportunity to kind of at least know what we're going to be talking about today. And today is the second anniversary of the passage of our new national health care law.
That hopefully is temporary.
And our guest today is going to be giving us some free market alternatives. She's quite the lady, quite the expert in healthcare. So she'll be jumping on here in just a moment. If you want to give us a call, the number is 605-4567. And if you're new to the show, we run from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Sunday on KCNR.
Webpage, wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah.
And the way that site is set up, each show has its own page. So if you email a link to that page to a friend, if that page is updated later, you'll have the updated version.
Right,
so
and we usually
goes
include,
right through.
We include all the links to all the articles, the websites, anything that is pertinent to the guest of the day. So it's all inclusive.
There you go.
It's a great opportunity to send out information to anyone, anywhere. We've got friends in South Korea, so no excuses not to send this information far and wide.
Exactly. So we have been tangled up in the problem of time zones today. So our guest, Grace Marie Turner, is with us for the first hour here. She's from the Galen Institute, she's also the co-author of Why Obamacare is Wrong for America that was published last year. And if you go to the webpage, there is a terrific link right there to the book. And
Let's get right to Grace Marie since she's only got an hour for us this morning.
She can tell us the important stuff from her resume so we don't just read something. Mm-hmm. Grace Marie, are you in there?
Yeah,
so today's
good
morning. This is the big anniversary.
Oh, jeez, I'll tell you. It's really some anniversary, isn't it, where the president basically doesn't want to even talk about it and sends his cabinet officials out to talk about a few of the small early things, and the rest of us are spending time explaining to the American people what we've learned in the first 2 years, which is not good.
Hey, now, Grace Marie, I've got a quick question, and somebody asked me this yesterday. The Supreme Court starts to argue this tomorrow, and they're going to argue the individual mandate that you must buy health insurance from a private party or there is a fine or jail. So basically, the federal government is telling us that we must purchase a free market product. Now, apparently the Supreme Court will not issue their decision until June. Do you know why?
Well, that's pretty traditional, typical, because once they hear the arguments, they go through all of, they've gotten 136 amicus briefs for this, which, and most of them are 20, 30 pages long. They have to decide how they're going to vote, and then they have to write up their own opinions. And that takes some time because it's a legal document. We'll have precedents for decades to come, and that's pretty typical to not get the actual decision until several months after the arguments are heard, because they have to make sure, they have to go back and basically write this up and make sure that it has all the proper legal citations, and that they do this. This is very typical. Actually, I think the Supreme Court's done a remarkable job of getting this through the system so quickly. To be able to hear a court case just about 2 years after enactment of a law is really almost unheard of. So as much as it seems slow to us, it's really fast in legal terms.
Well, talk to us a little bit about Galen Institute and how you guys figure in on this, because I had heard a fairly long interview with you a while back, but we haven't talked about it at all in the air. We were just waiting to have you.
Great. Well, this is such a crucial. I mean, I think this is the issue that is this battle for liberty of our time. If the government is going to be able to tell us that we have to purchase a private product with our own money that it defines, that's likely to cost as much as $20,000 a year for a family, what on earth can it not dictate that we do? So the Galen Institute, which I founded in 1995, is all about healthcare freedom. So this is the battle, our battle for liberty of our time too. Because I've started the Galen Institute not long after the Hillary Care debate. Because it was clear to me that after that effort at a government takeover of our healthcare system, the left was not going to give up. We had to continue to fight this, but even more importantly, we had to really articulate and do a better job than we had been doing before of explaining to people what free market health reform looks like and how we can solve the problems in our health sector, which we do have, but in a way that preserves freedom, gives people choice, and then protects the innovation and the quality that really makes American healthcare the best in the world. So I started the Galen Institute to really talk about those issues, and I think we have put the concept of consumer-directed healthcare on the map. We were early advocates of health savings accounts, of giving doctors and patients control over healthcare decisions, and building the policy ideas around that. And I run a group called the Health Policy Consensus Group that also is composed of the free market health policy advocates from a number of other think tanks as well. And we put together statements. Several of my colleagues from the other think tanks and I wrote our book called Why Obamacare is Wrong for America, published by HarperCollins last year, that was really a description of how we know this law is going to impact America. Families, young people, senior citizens, taxpayers, doctors and patients, employers. I mean, we know already what's going to happen because we know what the forces of collectivism do to an economy and to one-sixth of our economy in the health sector. So we wrote the book to really explain it to people, and it is really, every single word in that book is still true. I mean, we used government studies. We used a lot of independent studies to help people understand that people were going to lose the coverage that they have now. The health costs are going to rise. There's no way you can spend $1 trillion and reduce the deficit. But seniors are going to lose the coverage that they value in Medicare because they're taking $500 billion out of the program and they're putting a bunch of unelected bureaucrats in charge of rationing care. So we knew what was going to happen, and we have spent most of the time, the last 3 years, trying to explain to people what would happen if they passed it, and then what we know will happen as a result of passing this law. So I do a lot of writing. I do a lot of blog posts. I do a lot of commentaries and meetings with members of Congress, speeches all over the country. Love to do radio interviews like this. And love for people to visit our website at galen.org to learn more about what we do and to sign up for regular dispatches from us with news from the front.
So that would be nice. That would. Hey, and before we go to our break, maybe when we come back, if you wouldn't mind hitting a few of the highlights from your book, just some hard, cold facts to wake people up as to what the ramifications of Obamacare actually will be on their individual lives.
Mm-hmm. We always have, I mean, obviously there are a lot of people who realize what this law will do and what's wrong with it, but there are always people on there that are going, well, you know, my kids don't have insurance, and so this is probably going to help them. But I think at the end of the day, it doesn't insure everybody anyway, does it?
No, and I think that's really one of the, you know, people talk about, oh, well, finally we're going to get to universal coverage. Sorry, it's going to miss by about 25 million people, according to the best estimates, are going to not have health insurance. And McKinsey and Company assumes that as many as 30 million more Americans who have coverage today will drop it, because the new government mandated health insurance will be so expensive. And the rules say, well, they can buy a policy whenever they want it anyway. So if they get sick, they'll just go buy a policy, because the plans are required to sell it at the same rate they would if had they been insured all along.
Wow.
How's that for a market incentive?
Yeah, that's totally stupid. And at the beginning, wasn't it like 32 million people weren't insured? Wasn't that
right.
The number back then?
Yeah, and so now,
well,
it's going to be more.
Well, the government estimates, I mean, they're kind of all over the place. The official government estimates that 50 million people don't have health insurance, but that's a flowing number because people are moving in and out of jobs, in and out of coverage. But you break that down to people who are just, who could afford it but aren't buying coverage, people who are temporarily uninsured, but they're going to get it when they get job-based insurance, or people who are eligible for coverage in existing programs, Medicare, Medicaid, or the State Children's Health Insurance Program. You really get down to about 11 million people that we really needed to focus on. We did not need to turn our healthcare system upside down with this healthcare overhaul in order to be able to get coverage to the 10 or so million people who need it and have trouble getting it, and who may still, under this law, not get covered.
So really,
genius.
At the end of the day, this probably isn't so much about making sure that everyone has good health care as it is about control.
You know, you really have to look at that, because the rules and regulations that have come down from Washington, you know, remember that Secretary of Health and Human Services has 1,500 at least powers in this law to basically dictate whatever she decides is right to the healthcare system. And it is really, truly a centralization of power. They will create at least 159 new federal bureaucracies. The Obama administration has already hired 140,000 more federal workers in the 3 years he's been in office, and I suspect many of them to run this new healthcare law. So you do, it truly, the result is truly a centralization of power in Washington by a bunch of people who believe that healthcare is just too important to let us make our own decisions.
Well, and the fact that they hired how many IRS agents? I mean,
the law has the money in it for about 46,000 new IRS agents.
Now,
46,000?
Okay, folks, why do you need 46,000 IRS agents for your health care? If that doesn't wake you up, I don't know what will.
Crime.
I don't know if it's wake you up or knock you out.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to take a quick break here and see what kind of fun music Bob has for us this morning on We the People Radio. We'll be back with you at KCNR 1460, the home of Free Fire Media.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears that I've tried. Now I want to understand.
Jones's Fort, Redding's full-line gun shop, offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's full-line gun shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find the gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have 4 full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
It's a living thing. It's a terrible thing to lose. It's a given thing. What a terrible thing to lose.
Welcome back. We are talking with Grace Marie Turner this morning with the Galen Institute. We're talking about health care, the impending doom that will descend upon all of us.
We call it Obamacare.
When this thing really kicks into gear. So, Grace Marie, go ahead and move forward.
Well, first of all, I just did a word search. For somehow, this 46,000, I was mixing up a couple of different numbers. Actually, Paul Ryan assumes that they're going to hire 16,500 new IRS agents.
Still too many.
To correct that earlier. But it's still really scary.
And why would you do that? See, that's the thing. I mean, it's health care. Why would you need IRS agents?
Because that's the only way they can prove we have it.
There are all sorts of fines and penalties built into this law. The government expects to collect at least $120 billion over this first decade of Obamacare in penalties from businesses and individuals who don't comply with the mandates.
And of course,
basically saying, you know what, I'm just going to pay the fine. It's a $695 a year fine to not purchase health insurance.
But that goes up, doesn't it? Doesn't that creep up, that fine?
It creeps up. It starts out at 95. So the highest it goes is $695 a year or 2.5% of your income. But for a young person, and your question earlier about what are some of the highlights of our book, one of the things that I'm really concerned about is young people. But one of the main reasons that they pass this law is because pass the mandate, is because they want to get healthy young people who are in the system now in paying premiums so that the health insurance rates can level off. Well, what they're doing is telling healthy young people that you have to pay 2 to 3 times more for your health insurance than you would on a fairly rated system in order for older, sicker people to be able to pay less. Well, that's maybe fairness for a lot of people, but young people are very likely to say, you know what, I'm paying that $695 fine, and I'm not going to buy that health insurance because the health insurance costs $5,000 a year. And by the way, I'm going set to get sick, and if I do, they have to sell me a policy then anyway.
Yeah.
So it's just ludicrous. I think young people are among the most disadvantaged by Obamacare, and yet they were most enthusiastic about election of this president in 2008. So I think it's a really big double cross for young people.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to figure this out. Governor Mitch Daniels of Indiana just released a study last week showing that if a young person has a good job making $40-some thousand a year, that they're going to pay several times more for health insurance than they would have if they were just buying it on their own in the open market.
Oh, wow.
Because of these community rating provisions in the law.
Now, I'm assuming that you have read the law.
Yeah, but you have to read a lot more than just law because it's a bunch of gobbledygook. It's referring to Section 403B of public law, this and that, and changing a comma here and adding this phrase and deleting that. I mean, you have to really read the thing in a law library in order to understand it. But you'd really, you also have to read the analyses by the Congressional Budget Office, the Congressional Research Service, independent groups like McKinsey and Company, Deloitte, Deloitte, and a number of other companies that have done an independent analysis, because they're looking at not only what the law says, but the impact that it's going to have. McKinsey and Company, for example, did a survey showing that employers are seriously thinking about getting out of paying for health insurance because their fines are higher, but still much less than the cost of providing health insurance. For example, employers, well, if they have more than 50 workers, will be required to pay $2,000 a year in fines per employee if they don't provide health insurance. Well, that's a stiff fine, but it's a lot cheaper than a $10,000 or $15,000 health insurance policy, which
sure.
is what they will cost by the mm-hmm. time this is up and running.
Right, right. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because that was going to be my next question, and that was a big issue for employers, because I know of some that thought, you know, they were pushing for Obamacare because they knew that they could get off the hook with the $2,000 fine versus what they're having to do now and what they will have to do.
Companies don't want to violate federal law. They really don't.
No.
And people talk about it as though, oh, well, we'll just pay the fine. That's a violation of federal law.
Mm-hmm.
And they just don't want to do that. But they may find other ways around this. I mean, a lot of restaurant owners, for example, that just paying the fine, the $2,000 fine, for all their employees would be more than their profit margin. It would be cheaper for them
Jeez.
To fire everybody and go out of business
mm-hmm.
than to comply with just the fine.
Right.
So a lot of them are thinking, well, if I put all my employees on part-time, then I'm not subject to the fine. So a lot of people who have full-time jobs now,
mm-hmm.
particularly people getting their foot on the ladder working, you know, at McDonald's or CVS or at a retail job, they may have full-time jobs now, but they're going to have part-time jobs at best after Obamacare goes in effect, because the employers have to protect themselves from all of these huge new costs in Obamacare. And yet all of these costs were one of the reasons that the Obama administration pretended the law was paid for, that it was actually going to reduce the deficit. Well, it's because of new taxes, $500 billion in new taxes, all of these fines, $500 billion in cuts to Medicare, and therefore they pretend that they're going to reduce the deficit. But Secretary Sebelius was asked at a recent congressional hearing by one of the members was challenging her, because the chief actuary for Medicare had actually said you can't count the savings from Medicare twice. They were counting it both to improve Medicare as well as to create the new entitlement program with subsidies for health insurance for people up to about $90,000 a year. They said you can't count the money twice. Which is it? Are you going to save? Are you going to put the money toward Medicare? Are you going to
pay down the debt?
And
yeah.
She said both, and that was it. She just, I mean, she basically, is that a lie to Congress? I don't know. But when you say you're going to do something that the chief actuary for Medicare says you can't do, help me understand.
She needs to redo her math.
Okay, let's do a small survey here in the studio. Bob, Elizabeth?
Yes.
Do you think it's lying to Congress?
Yes.
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 In the private sector, that would be called a scam.
Yeah.
Yeah, fraud, don't you think?
Clean sweep.
Yeah.
Anybody that tried that and tried to get crosswise with the SEC, oh, let's just count this income twice and then tell our shareholders that we're balancing the books? Excuse me.
Jeez.
Well, see, and my thing has always been, for all these, for all the people who voted this in and thought this was super important, especially all the young people that really, they have not experienced, you know, trying to buy a house, they, you know,
And they probably never will.
Yeah, they just haven't been there and done that.
Can we stay with the young people one more minute?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That's one of the things that when people say, oh, well, you know, the law's pretty good because I now can keep my 26-year-old on my family policy.
Mm, that's true. That's another piece.
That takes maybe a page of the law.
Wow.
Out of how many? 2,800 pages. If somebody likes it because of that, let's fix that a different way. You don't have to have... I mean, it's not the tip of the iceberg. It's a drop of water on the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. Well, and...
You can't say that all these few little things that the president's been talking about, 26-year-olds on their parents' policies, some help for seniors with their drug costs in the donut hole, help for people with preventive, with pre-existing condition. Those are things that we can fix, but we do not have to have the federal government take over virtually the entire health. They're federalizing health insurance so that the Secretary of Sebelius can be in charge. And with somebody that clueless, do you want her to be in charge of a $2.5 trillion economy when she can't even figure out about this Medicare savings issue?
Well,
so young people are going to,
she's willing to lie,
pay
too.
Higher premiums. They're mandated to purchase coverage. They're going to have a harder time getting their foot on the ladder because jobs are not going to be available to them. And this 26-year-old provision could have been solved in a different way. And one of the things that's happening is that because companies find adding these 26-year-olds to the company policy is so expensive, a lot of them are dropping dependent coverage altogether.
Sure.
In fact, the labor union in New York that was a big supporter of Obamacare dropped dependent coverage because so many people were trying to put their adult children on their policies. They said, we can't afford that, so we're not going to provide any dependent coverage.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about backfiring.
You know, and I think that what some people fail to grasp is that the magnitude, the consequences of this law are they will be the biggest consequences that this country has ever seen in its history.
Well, and maybe that we should talk about the individual mandate in the next segment, because I think that really is the crux of the Supreme Court argument that's coming up on Tuesday, and it's the crux of the challenge to freedom. And that's why I think no matter what the law does or doesn't do, that's really the question. It is a realignment of the relationship between citizens and their government, between citizens and states, actually, and the federal government, that will absolutely shred the Constitution if this goes into effect.
It's actually more primary than that. It's kind of a realignment between us and our parents. We now have a new daddy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
state.
Very, very primary. We will be right back with Grace Marie Turner from the Galen Institute. We're talking about Obamacare today. And you're listening to We the People Radio at KCNR 1460 AM. You have 2 minutes to get coffee here at the home of Free Fire Media. See you in a minute.
Tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
We're streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob. That was awesome. Who is it?
The Rascals, or the Young Rascals, as they were known back then.
Now they're old rascals like us.
That's right.
Hey, you guys, you got to jump on the chat room. I know we're having a really serious conversation here, so if you need a little lighter note, go to WeThePeopleRadio.us, jump on the chat room. It's hilarious.
Yes, as always. Okay, so, Grace Marie, what's the... If you were going to pick out something that... okay, somebody was just up. Obviously, there are some people who will support this just blindly because that's what they will do. But if there was somebody who truly had not thought this issue of Obamacare through, and you just really wanted to, you know, fire an arrow right at the heart of the matter, what would you pick?
I talk about how harmful this is going to be for the most vulnerable people in our society. One of the things that Obamacare does is expand Medicaid, the joint federal-state program for low-income people, expands it by 16 million people. That's putting 16 million more people into what I believe is the worst health care program in the country. Medicaid is a ghetto of a health care program. It pays doctors and hospitals so little that people will have to, they can't find a doctor to see them, so they have to go to hospital emergency rooms just for routine care because they can't find a doctor who's willing to see, who can afford to see very many patients for $7 for an office visit. I mean, it doesn't even help keep on the lights, much less pay staff and all the billing bureaucracy that has to happen. What's going to happen? By putting people up to families making up to $30,000 a year onto Medicaid, as the law does, will mean that people on the program who have nowhere else to go for care are going to have to compete with 16 million more people for the few doctors who will see Medicaid patients. So people who may have decent health coverage now, as they move up the income ladder, they could get better coverage, who we could help with tax credits to get private coverage. They're going to now be competing with people on Medicaid, the lowest of income and the sickest people often, to see the doctors who will be able, who can afford to take Medicaid patients. That, I think, is really one of the worst things about this law, is it's going to hurt the people who are most vulnerable. The chief of medicine at Johns Hopkins University Medical Center in Baltimore, Ed Miller, wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal just before this passed, basically pleading with Congress to not expand Medicaid on one day of January 1 of 2014 by 16 million people. He said, we cannot handle it. It's going to crash the system. And explaining nice. Why doctors can't afford to take Medicaid. I have a doctor friend who lives and works in Florida. He's an internist but specializes in lung issues. He takes Medicaid patients as much as he can. Had one patient with pretty complicated problems, and through this private insurance, he would have billed and gotten paid about $750 for that course of treatment for that patient. But it was a Medicaid patient. So he billed Medicaid back and forth with the states, lots of time eaten up on the billing paperwork. When he finally got paid, he got a check for one penny.
Oh, my gosh.
And they wonder, why do doctors not take Medicaid patients?
Yeah, huge
That's
mystery.
Why.
Now, I've got a quick question. At what point, actually, two questions. At what point?
Wait, you said one.
I'm changing my mind. I'm a woman. I can
all
do
right,
that.
Right.
First question is, at what point do our doctors become government employees? And second, where does the legal system fit into all of this if, in fact, our entire medical system becomes government-run? It's not like you can sue the government. I mean, the whole malpractice insurance issue has kind of driven up health care costs. Where do those two things factor in?
Well, once the government is controlling our lives, and I think this gets back to the paternalism that you were talking about earlier, you really don't have anywhere else to go. That's one of the reasons that people in countries that have socialized healthcare systems say they like their system because they don't know anything else. They don't have a sense of what it would be like to have private insurance and companies competing for your business to try to provide better benefits at lower cost. In this country, a lot of people don't have that experience either because they either take it or leave it. The job, the coverage they get at work is their only option. They may not like it, but it's better than nothing. In a true, vibrant market economy for health insurance, people would be able to choose the coverage that works for them at a price they can afford, and we'd help people at the lower end of the income scale with the money to purchase that private insurance rather than have the government run it. But if the government runs it, there's nowhere else to go, and I don't know. I don't have the money to sue the federal government if I don't like the care that I'm getting or if I think that the benefit that I need should be added to the benefit list. We will all become supplicants to the government, which is why this individual mandate, the key arguments that will be held this week before the Supreme Court are on Tuesday morning and Wednesday afternoon. Tuesday morning, they will hear arguments about the individual mandate. Can we be required just by virtue of breathing in this country to purchase health insurance mandated by the government under penalty of federal law? That's Tuesday. Wednesday is whether the states can be required to expand their Medicaid programs up to a level that many say will bankrupt them. They cannot do that and still provide funding for education and public safety and transportation, other things that the state, a lot of people think are really important. But they will, so those are the two issues. But I really think Tuesday morning is the crucial discussion. Can we be required? Because if the federal government can tell us we can spend, we must spend a very large amount of our own private money on a private product, health insurance.
Can these hearings,
what can they not tell us to do?
Can these hearings be viewed by the general public?
They no. The arguments are not are going to be closed to television cameras, and even people who are in there can't have BlackBerries, and so we have to wait till people come out to send us dispatches. The line started forming on Friday. I'm going to try to figure out how I can monitor this electronically. There's just no way to actually get in there. But the Supreme Court will release an audio tape of the day's arguments at 2:00 on Monday and Tuesday afternoons at supremecourt.gov at 2:00 on Monday and Tuesday afternoons, and then on Wednesday at 4:00. And that's because Wednesday they have both a morning and an afternoon session. So audio tapes will be released that day. Video transcripts later in the week. And obviously people, I think, following Twitter and Facebook and just following online what's going to be happening will be important. I'm going to be doing some blogging for National Review online, and I think others are as well.
Now, Grace Marie, who will be arguing both sides?
There actually are several different lawyers, but the arguments on this key issue about the individual mandate will be by the Paul Clement, who's a lawyer in private practice in Washington, but he's argued more Supreme Court cases than any lawyer alive today. I mean, a current contemporary lawyer. And on the government side, the lawyer is, I can't remember his name, so it starts with a V. He's the Solicitor General in the Justice Department for the Obama administration. So those are the two key people. And then, of course, I expect all 9 justices will be there. This is the former Attorney General Ed Meese said, this is the most important case the Supreme Court has heard in 100 years.
Wow.
And so all attention. I'm sure there were marches and demonstrations Friday and Saturday. There will be more this next week. I believe Tuesday, because that's the individual mandate hearing, that's going to really be the crux of the day. And, you know, obviously we'll all be following this on the news broadcast, too, which will be following this very closely.
Holy cow. Well, if people out there think that it doesn't affect them because they don't have insurance now and they're just going to slide onto Obamacare later, good luck to you.
Yeah. Let us know how that
especially
goes.
Especially if you think you're going to have a job. We're going to take a really quick break here. Be right back with Grace Marie Turner from the Galen Institute. We're talking about Obamacare today. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
My doctor on the telephone, help me doctor, something's wrong, I can't shake it, it's gone too far, he said tell me what your symptoms are, he said my hands are sweaty and my knees are weak, I can't eat and I can't sleep, it's turning me every way but loose, he said it sounds like love's got a hold on you.
If you have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at MillerAutoTransport.com.
You are streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Back with Grace Marie Turner of the Galen Institute. So, Grace Marie, before we wrap it up at 9 o'clock, why don't you just take the next 10 minutes and just kind of let people know what they really need to know.
They really need to know. First of all, what you really need to know is to go to supremecourt.gov, all one word, and that's where you're going to be able to get whatever information they post about this the day's hearings. I'm sure the website's going to crash, but, you know, we can all do our best. But, you know, monitor this. This is really consequential. Listen to the questions that Justice Kennedy asks, because he's really considered to be the swing vote in this case. Justice Alito, certainly Justice Supreme Court, Chief Justice Roberts, those are going to really be, I think, very important, and Scalia. Those are the four justices who really need to vote that this law is unconstitutional. So monitor this. This is really, it really is the battle for freedom of our time. If the government can tell us we have to purchase a private product with our own money, what's to keep them from telling us all we have to buy a Chevy Volt because right. they want to make sure that General Motors does better?
And Grace Marie,
they will order our lives.
If you were a gambler, which way would you say this goes with the Supreme Court? Where would you put your money?
You know, that's an interesting question. I actually have a speech in Las Vegas this coming weekend, and I understand that there are odds on the Supreme Court. But, you know, when you look
can I get in on that action?
The public opinion polls, in one poll showed that 82% of the American people don't think the federal government should be able to order us to purchase private coverage. And it's the centerpiece. It's like the center pole in the tent.
Sure.
Much of Obamacare would, even if the Supreme Court rules that the individual mandate and the state mandate on Medicaid, that those are unconstitutional and throws them out, 95% of Obamacare is still going to be in place. You've still got all these huge new subsidies that are going to bankrupt the federal government, all the changes to Medicare, all of the insurance rules and regulations. You still have a huge, huge change in our health care system coming. So that's why people need to, they do need to get our book. I mean, I'm not going to make any money off this, but people need to know what else is in the law. because even if they rule in our favor, which is at best a 50-50 chance, then the rest of the law still stands, which is why I think this is going to continue to have to be a major issue in the November election, presidential election, because the only way we're going to be able to get rid of Obamacare is if we have a majority in the Senate and a president willing to sign legislation to repeal the law, and a House continuing to willing to pass it, as they did when the Republicans took over early last year. So you've got to have the House and the Senate and a president willing to sign it. You don't have to have 60 votes in the Senate. That's a very high threshold. But if you have 51 Republicans, they will be able to repeal most of the scary parts that will bankrupt our economy with through the same means that they passed it, through reconciliation. So we can get rid of Obamacare then. We cannot rely on the Supreme Court. That's where all the attention is. But even if they vote our way and it's only a 50-50 chance they will, we still have to deal with Obamacare, and that's why we need to know what's in it. So people need to look at why Obamacare is wrong for America. This might have worked for some other country. It's not going to work for a country that's organized around the concept of freedom, the sovereignty of individuals, the states' rights, and the federal government having limited powers. This law turns all of that on its head.
It's one of those things where you're dumbfounded.
Really? How did sensible people do this, get it through? Other people thought it was great. I mean, it's just mind-blowing.
Everybody tried to stop it.
They did
try to stop it. I was there. I was there the night this passed. And a member of Congressman Fortenberry from Nebraska saw how hard I'd fought through this whole thing. Do you want to watch it when it finally goes over the top? And at first I said, no, I can't watch this. And I thought, no, it's my duty. It's my obligation to be there. So I went and I sat in the galleries as I heard all these fake speeches from supporters. Oh, we're going to get to universal coverage. No. Oh, we're going to reduce the deficit. No. Oh, everybody's going to be able to keep the coverage they have now. No.
For sure, no.
Oh, it's going to reduce costs for both taxpayers and people. No. None of the things that they said in voting for this law were true. I would have thrown myself in front of a tank if there had been one there to stop this. But there were a cheerful, happy, and not happy, but still fighting group of people that were on the lawn outside the balcony of the House of Representatives, that were still there. It was past about 11 o'clock at night. They were there with the lights. They had a stage set up with microphones. Members of Congress would come out and talk to them. They were fighting till the very end, thinking that they could stop this law. So it's been the Tea Party all along that understood the threat to freedom that this poses, and that's why it has to continue to be our rallying cry, because it's about so much more. It's about whether or not we're going to be able to control federal spending so that we do not rob our children of their chance at prosperity. It's about the relationship between sovereign citizens and our government. Are we truly a free people? If this law goes into effect, that will not be the case. So we have to stop it, if not through the Supreme Court, then at the ballot box in November. And I will do, and will continue to do, everything I can to help people understand why this must be stopped. We have to have a new president, and we have to have control of the Senate by Republicans in order to be able to get this done.
I know nobody has a crystal ball in this deal, which is wholly unfortunate, but do you believe that the guys that are running, do you think even Romney will repeal this?
He actually had a piece in USA Today on Friday where he seems to have really become He seems to be getting it, that one of the reasons that he's having such a hard time in the Republican presidential primary elections is because they don't trust him on health care.
Mm-hmm.
And he had it was as forceful as I have seen him be. I will repeal this and all the reasons that he says he thinks it's wrong. He's being pushed rather than led into this space. I'll take it any way I can get it.
Yeah.
So I do think he understands, because he understands how much the American people, it has never gotten a majority of support. People do not like this law. They don't like the mandates. They don't like the spending. They don't like the fact that health care costs are continuing to increase. This law was a mistake. It's a violation. It is unconstitutional down to its very DNA, because the concept is socialism and a social welfare state, not freedom.
We only have a couple of minutes here, but you know that individual mandate, without there being a severability clause in the health care bill, at one point we heard that if the individual mandate was struck down, it pretty much sucked the whole law, you know, off the books. But then I've heard in the last few months that that's actually not true.
Well, when they passed this law, they took out the clause that says if any one part of this law is declared invalid, the rest of the law stands. That's the severability provision. But the court could imply severability, and lower courts have done that. Said, well, we know that you meant to do this. We're not going to throw out the whole law. That will be the Wednesday morning hearing, and whether or not, if they were to declare the individual mandate unconstitutional, can it be severed from the rest of the law, or does the whole thing have to come down? One lower court judge said yes, others have said no. So that's going to be a very interesting question. I give it maybe a 5% chance that the Supreme Court would throw out the whole law, but I give a 50-50 chance that they throw out the individual mandate. But even then, only 50-50,
okay.
Which means that becoming, that staying politically active is crucially important.
Yeah, and we want to remember,
the folks listening here are the key people to save our country.
Don't forget to go to the Galen Institute to get updates.
Absolutely. Galen.org.
All right, we're going to have Grace Marie Turner on a different day. Thank you so much for spending the hour with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See what we learned.
We'll talk to you again.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
More of We the People straight ahead here at KCNR Shasta Redding.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
All things healthcare today. We had Grace Marie Turner, president and founder of the Galen Institute, on for our first hour. We will have Grace Marie back at a future date to kind of keep us updated on what's happening with Obamacare in the court system. And I just wanted to kind of reiterate the fact that if you do want to keep up on a regular basis with information about this healthcare and its individual mandates that you probably won't hear in the mainstream news, go to the Galen Institute, and that website is www.galen.org. Sign up for their regular emails, and you can find out everything that you need to know on a regular basis so that you can keep up with this. And she did mention, and I'm primarily reiterating this for those who are tuning in only for the second hour. If you want to follow the Supreme Court hearings that start tomorrow, they will be having audio reports that will come out at 2:00 on Monday afternoon, Tuesday afternoon, and sometime late on Wednesday afternoon. And if you do want to follow the transcripts or the audio recordings, you can go to supremecourt.com. KCNR.gov, and you can follow along. So that's going to be pretty important. And Grace Marie did encourage everyone to really pay close attention to Justice Kennedy. He is the swing vote. He's the one that can decide which way this matter will go, and it's going to be real important to follow his questions and his arguments and in this whole issue, which will start tomorrow. Supreme Court, and I guess it's quite a record that any law that passed as recently as 2 years ago could make it to the Supreme Court this quickly. That's unheard of. It's also stated that this case will be the largest and most important case that the Supreme Court has heard in over 100 years. So it's worth your while to stay tuned because this will impact your life, everyone's. What do you think, Bob?
Couldn't agree more. Had a terrific guest on the first hour, and I do encourage you to listen on the archives at KCNR1460.com if you happen to miss the first hour. But we will have Grace Marie Turner back at some point in the future as this Supreme Court process moves along. And there are, of course, this being the second anniversary weekend of the signing of the Obamacare law, a lot of different takes from people, no shortage of those. But one that I found particularly interesting was a piece that Grover Norquist wrote on Friday. Grover Norquist is the president of Americans for Tax Reform. And he, dissecting Obamacare, said the law contains 20 new or higher taxes on American families and small employers, and at least 7 of those tax increases fall directly on families making less than $250,000 a year. This is a direct violation of candidate Obama's firm pledge against any form of tax increase on these families, again, those making less than $250,000 a year.
How many?
Sorry, you're back on now.
I was muted? Wow. He muted me. Aw, I was muted. Hey, okay, so how many again?
Did you have any luck, by the way?
No.
So, so it's just us the second hour?
Just us chickens. We're going to wing it. Hey, no, say that again. How many tax increases? 20?
20 new or higher taxes on American families and small employers, and 7 of those tax increases fall directly on families making less than $250,000 per year.
Terrific. And we have a caller.
Hold that thought, and I'll get the phone.
Okay, bye, Bob. And I also
wanted to mute himself now.
I wanted to remind people to consider buying Grace Marie's book, because
yes.
In that book, she details out every single impact that this is going to have on your life as a no longer free American citizen, I might add.
Exactly. It's called Why Obamacare is Wrong for America. And it's kind of fun because the typeface is huge on the front of this book. And the Obamacare and wrong, those two words are in bright, bright red. So it would be a great coffee table book.
Yeah, there you go. When you have all of your pro-Obamacare supporters over for dinner.
Yeah, it'd just be a subtle, you know, a subtle little thing just sitting right there on your coffee table.
Well, and the thing about Grace Marie Turner is, you know, we didn't get into her bio because we only had her for an hour, but if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, we do have her entire bio. This woman knows what she's talking about. She isn't just someone with an opinion. You know, she's got the years in private and public healthcare reform and service and, you know, all the academics involved. She knows what she's talking about.
She's a smart cookie.
Yes, she is.
So, if you want me to get to the punchline on these 7 examples that Grover Norquist cited of taxes on families making less than $250,000 a year. Again, on every one of these areas,
that would be all 3 of us.
There is no exemption for families making less than $250,000 a year. Yes.
No exemptions. Okay.
And again, that's a direct violation of Obama's firm pledge against any form of tax increase on these families back when he was a candidate. The 7 examples that Norquist sites are the individual mandate has an excise tax for noncompliance of at least 2.5% of adjusted gross income. Now, Grace Marie mentioned that one in the first hour.
Mm-hmm.
The medicine cabinet tax prevents families from using their health savings accounts or workplace flex savings accounts to purchase non-prescription over-the-counter medicines on a pre-tax basis. Three, the special needs kids or braces tax puts a cap of $2,500 for the first time on FSAs. Prior to Obamacare's passage, families with very high medical bills could put an IRS unlimited amount in their FSAs to pay
for
things.
Which is a flexible spending account.
Yeah, that's right, to pay for things like special needs tuition or braces on a pre-tax basis, but Obamacare changed all that. Four, Obamacare imposes a 20% surtax on non-medical early withdrawals from health savings accounts. This results in a tax rate on these distributions, which can easily exceed 60%. Five, President Obama's signature law decreases the amount that families can deduct in medical expenses from their taxable income. Under current law, medical expense claims must be reduced by 7.5% of adjusted gross income. Obamacare increases this haircut to 10% of adjusted gross income. Six, searching under every rock for more tax money, Obamacare has already imposed a 10% excise tax on tanning bed sessions. And seven, finally, in 2018, Obamacare will levy a 40% excise tax on high-cost health insurance plans, known as Cadillac plans, which will, of course, have to be built into the health insurance premium, making those premiums even more expensive. And again, on every one of those, no exemption for families making less than a quarter million a year.
And, you know, a lot of times a person will look at a tax increase as actually being a legitimate increase in their tax rates. But your taxes increase simply by having deductions removed.
Exactly.
A moment of silence was observed, for, so we could all think
that
through.
Just processing that.
Yeah, so that, you know, so it's just like, okay, right now you write off your property tax and the interest on your mortgage loan. Well, what if you can no longer use your mortgage interest as a write-off? There go your taxes.
That's an effective tax increase.
Your taxes just went up. And so that's the way you need to look at things. When if it sounds to you like any one of those things isn't going to increase your taxes, imagine that you can't write those things off anymore. Your taxes just went up.
Do we want to say hello to Doug?
Let's do it.
Good morning, Doug.
Good morning.
We've got Senator Ramalfa with us. We were thinking that it might be fun to hear a couple things from you, actually, while you can hang with us. We know that the California legislature is dying to pass universal health care for California, and they keep coming back at it.
Senate Bill 810 is lurking out there somewhere.
Yeah, and so we all know we don't like it, but could you tell us why we don't like it?
Well, it's in a lot of ways the mirror image of Obamacare that you've just been speaking about there. So if the country decides to wise up and, you know, beat back Obamacare, if the Supreme Court makes their decision here in a couple of months that it's illegal or just unconstitutional, you know, the rest of the country would be relieved from that mandate, but here would be California on its own island, still forcing it down the throats of those that are going to have to pay for it, the employers, the folks that individually would suffer that. So it's probably not exactly the same thing, but I don't know if anybody's ever had time to read 2,700 pages of Obamacare to compare it to California's version.
And Doug, correct me if I'm wrong, but
we're wrong. We're supposed to wait. I'm sorry.
Wait until I'm done and then tell me I'm wrong. You silly girl.
That's a preemptive correction.
Yeah, there you go. So one of the issues that the Supreme Court is going to be ruling on will be the expansion of Medicaid in any given state. So can I assume with California, if they're going to push their own form of universal health care, they probably are really pushing to expand Medicaid as well?
Well, it relies on participation in the federal government, because their Medi-Cal is just an extension of that. And so I think, you know, the way California attacks it, it just goes after more on mandating employers doing all the heavy lifting there. Whereas you come back to Obamacare, part of what it's trying to do is it's going to completely shift Medicare away from what you have now. It's going to be $500 billion per year shift away from that into trying to make Obamacare look like it works. So again, there's different angles, different directions, but kind of at the end of the day, the same goals achieved, and you have government having way more influence on how your health care is going to be paid for, delivered, what decisions will be made for before you, you know, you were talking about, you know, different caps at different levels of what they will pay for. And that means you quit using it after you hit that cap. Well, right now, although we have a very imperfect system, you don't have nearly some of those constraints if you have decent health insurance. And people that are paying for decent health insurance now don't even have that option of using above what the big brother allows you to use.
Oh, so we all get dumbed down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, rationed down, dumbed down. And I keep coming back to the concept. Just finding three other things that the federal government runs well that we can model this after.
Yeah, let's pick one part.
Find maybe one thing that runs really well. We can have some of those people in that department help run this new healthcare system, and maybe we could talk. But I'm not finding that. You know, we're everything's running short of money. Everything has cost overruns. Everything has too many people in it standing around, not really doing a job other than drawing a salary. And so I don't see what the model is for that. We have a better chance at the private sector. Yes, there's the imperfections, you know. But what I always come down to on any piece of what government is running or what it regulates that it can affect, what government policy affects, is if we focus on things that drive up costs. If we look for ways, as a business person, you're always looking for ways to exert influence on what you control. I can't control the price of what I get for a product as a business owner, but I can try and do things that affect how much I pay out, how much my costs are. If government do much more about what it does to drive costs, then things become more affordable. And the market works better that way when the market has an idea of what its costs are going to be and some stability for more than 1 year in a row of what the rules are going to be.
Well, I, you know, it's funny, we're looking at the chat room, which is kind of part of our silence. We're not really that good of listeners. but we're great. We didn't sound like we were really polite. But, you know, people have run off on a tangent about the post office. When you said, you know, name some, you know, phase of government or something run by government that's working well. And, you know, of course.
And there's always the DMV. Don't forget that.
The post office is being bludgeoned. I'm sure we'll move on to the DMV. We need to take a quick break so that everybody can line up on the DMV there in the chat room. Go to wethepeople.us, click on listen, chat room will come up for you. You're listening to KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
If your advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Join the conversation in our chat room, KCNR1460.com.
Drumsticks. I was having a great time. Hey, welcome back to We the People Radio.
Yeah, Elizabeth had some serious boogie fever.
I'm loving it. Hey,
We are made for radio.
We are. Yeah, because you haven't seen us. No. They tried to get our picture taken, and we have managed to avoid that. Who wants to look at two overweight middle-aged women, huh?
Hey.
Speak for myself.
I was thinking, man, you just threw Bob under the bus.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I keep telling Carl he should charge the weekend host not to turn the cameras on. I think our business model is backwards.
Fight back, Bob. Fight back. Hey, so I wanted to just touch on Obamacare a little bit more. You know, I had asked Grace Marie Turner about at what point would our doctors become government employees, and the reason that I asked that was I know Aaron and I both in recent years have had health issues with our parents and where we were both very involved. And I remember my mother was recovering from breast cancer, and when she went in for her final checkup, her cancer doctor was so happy to tell her that she was fine, that he had tears in his eyes. And the level of concern and caring and compassion in this doctor was overwhelming to me, and I was at that moment thrilled that she was in his care. Now, I challenge anyone to find a government employee that is A, enthusiastic, B, caring and concerned about the service that they deliver you, and D, how many of them say, I know that I work for you. So if it comes to that point where our doctors become government employees, if you are in a situation where you have a life-threatening illness, and let's face it, as we have an aging population, that's, you know, the odds of that are pretty good, how is it going to be that your life and death care is in the hands of, you know, a DMV employee or the equivalent of?
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to go well.
I don't know if people think that far ahead, but
Senator, since you've been dealing with government employees at the hub there slightly more than we do, what do you think?
The limitations that anybody in that kind of a constraint, it probably has to be a situation where you become more dispassionate, because when government says I as your doctor am only allowed to give you so much patient care, health care, I can only give you this amount of time or number of visits or until we hit the cap, then at a point it becomes kind of like a triage situation. I can only care so much, because pretty soon I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I'm not allowed to give you more care. And so when an individual has a federal law saying you can't go out somewhere and pay for more on your own if you wanted to, if you had your own stash or your own additional assurance that came from somewhere, once this thing fully kicks in and you're down to a rationing situation, how is that doctor? I mean, it's going to take extraordinary people to want to care beyond that, which I know many people in the doctor's profession, or, you know, teachers, you know, you have the teachers that come in and they just want to teach kids. They want to serve that way, and they want to, you know, get their classroom going and all that. And then after they've been beaten down by silly policy made by the state or what their union rep tells them, they should start filing grievances against everybody because we just have to be against them. Teachers can get beaten down by that too. And coming back to the medical profession there, more and more doctors, because of how hard it is to get reimbursed and compensated by when government is providing, you have less people entering into the field, and more of them want to just work for a firm instead of having their own shingle out there. And so more of them are becoming the 9-to-5 type, which I'm not discrediting that. It's more of a situation of they're tired of playing the game with the government already in the middle of that role in Medi-Cal. And they would like to just see their patients and not worry about having to have all this extra staff to put out the bills and hope to get reimbursed, you know, 90 days or 6 months later by government, or all the extra insurance you have to carry, all the nonsense of government already interfering so much with the rationing or the payment that they're going to get.
Well, you look too.
It's encouragement to the doctors that, by nature, want to serve people, when we have this. And so we want to do more of that with Obamacare or SB 810 here in California?
Well, and I think, and I've heard,
well, look at the cost. I mean, look at the cost of getting, you know, getting an education, especially if you want to be a specialist of some kind. I wouldn't even hazard a guess at how much that costs. It, I mean, it's
and the time, you know.
Yeah, the time and the money.
For your college, you get your degree. Some people get a master's or some, you know, an extra year or two. Doctorate, I mean, for the medical profession, there's so many years in residency and
and huge money. And you know,
10, 12 years.
How are you going to do that? If you are, let's say you're in an auto accident and you're laying in the emergency room and they're attempting to save your life. At that point, when you look up at the doctor that has the power to save your life, are you really going to care about how much money they make at that point? I don't think so. I don't think you're going to care about the car they drive or the house they live in. And trust me, they've earned every penny.
Especially when they have the ability to make sure
when
that
it's you or your kid or your spouse under the knife. So at that point, it's you.
You'd pay him anything
for making sure that they hold scalpel correctly when they're fiddling around with the...
You know, and I've heard that the numbers of new students in medical schools has gone down dramatically because they see what's on the horizon, and they know that they can't get into the medical field for the reasons that they wanted to, which was to help people. None of them want to become government employees. That's not
why
they did it.
That's why you're seeing so many more people coming from other countries to get in our system here. They get the education here, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
But then they may not stay here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of folks from foreign countries that are the doctors here. And so are they going to stick around for this once they have that education, or are they going to go back somewhere else? And so it's kind of a double whammy. We're not educating as many of our own, and the ones that have in the past stayed here that help people here. They might say, you know, sayonara, we're going to go back somewhere else and not provide the service. So we're not even educating people that would help our own citizens with the disincentive of what they got going on here.
Yeah, it's always nice when we put a disincentive on something we all really need.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, we've got Don Shulman online. We better say hi to him. It sounds like he's in transit. He should be arriving here shortly. Don, are you in there?
Good morning.
Wow.
You know, sometimes I live in an idealistic world.
What?
And I never understood why they haven't taken such a complicated issue as health insurance and made it simpler. For example, people who have insurance pay less than those who don't have insurance. Why not just get the right premium, whatever that is, cover the people who have insurance 100%, and the people who don't have insurance pay the same amount as the people would have paid if they'd had insurance or didn't? Clear as mud, isn't it?
There you go. Well,
and why do we leave the pharmaceutical people alone when you can buy a medicine for $20 in Canada or other places and it's $400 here?
Oh, and haven't we made it against the law to travel across country lines to get into Canada to buy those pharmaceuticals cheaper? Is that now a law?
Well, I used to order my thyroid stuff from Canada because it was $7 a month, and it gets stopped at the border.
What we need to do is give free optorectomies when they cut the cord between the eyeball and the rectum and relieve people's crappy outlook on life.
Jeez, Don.
All right, we're calling in on your show today.
I bet you are.
That's funny.
We're going to talk about internet dating. Anyway, your guest is very interesting and well-informed. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Don. See you soon.
Yeah.
Don.
Oh, leave it to Don. Oh, my gosh. Okay, so, all right, SB 810 is the law in California, and so just so people know, like where is that right now?
Well, so far it got stalled on the Senate floor. Miraculously, we were partnered up with all the Republicans voting no, and about five or six, maybe seven Democrats that are a little bit more pro-business did not put the votes out to get that out. So
mm-hmm.
We're it's hanging out there in limbo right now, but at the end of the day, they want to pass this stuff, and there's a governor that wants to sign this stuff. So you're never out of peril of something like this happening. So
yeah, just because it doesn't go the first time, they're never going to stop trying.
When are we safe? What's
when the legislature's out of session?
Okay, so we get to
so that means there's these 3 month windows in the year where they're not down there legislating.
we can all breathe easy.
But you know, they're just off somewhere recharging their batteries, thinking up many more things to come back with. But they don't mind throwing at the wall again and again until it finally sticks, and that's what we see. So we have to keep doing better in elections if we're going to balance that and come back someday to California being a state that is run by people with an attitude of what's good for business, what's good for families, what's good for basic mathematics. I mean, you can still go back to a day where San Francisco used to elect Republican mayors. So, Shazam, right?
Used to be a time when the San Francisco policeman carried, or San Francisco police chief carried a gun, too. we live in a topsy-turvy world, don't we? We need to take a really swift break. We'll be right back here on We the People Radio. We're talking about Obamacare and just, kind of bashing government in general, actually. So feel free to pile on. Phone number 605-4567. Be back with you in 2 minutes.
With a lot of life before me, when a moment came that stopped me on a dime, I spent most of the next days looking at the x-rays, talking about the options, and talking about sweet time. I asked him when it sank in that this might really be the real end. How's it hit you when you get that kind of news? Man, what you do? And he said, I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a full name for Manchu. And I looked deeper, and I spoke sweeter, and I gave forgiveness I've been denying. And he said, someday I hope you get the chance to live like you were dying.
Have a vehicle, a boat, or even a plane that needs to be transported, you need Miller Auto Transport. In the auto business for over 40 years, we take pride in the efficiency, the professionalism, and the safety of our transport teams. Unmatched by any other auto transport or carrier company in the nation, we transport to all 50 states and overseas. To find out more or to get a quote, visit our website at millerautotransport.com.
Jones's Fort, Redding's full-line gun shop, offers the largest selection of guns and gun accessories in the North State. We are Redding's full-line gun shop. Since 1969, we have been serving the Redding area. We at Jones's Fort take pride in being able to offer you sound advice on all your gun questions. You'll always find a good selection of new and used guns at Jones's Fort. We'll help you find the gun that is perfect for you. Have a gun you no longer need? Bring it to us. We buy, trade, and consign. Informal appraisals are given free at no charge. No gun shop is complete without expert gunsmiths. We have 4 full-time gunsmiths who can service all types of firearms. In our full machine shop, we can enhance the performance of your favorite gun or build you a custom gun to meet your needs. Marshal Dave Jones II heads up our Firearm Institute, where we do California concealed weapon classes, Utah classes, and hunter education classes. Come see us at Jones's Fort.
This is KCNR, the home of Free Fire Media.
Grandma got run over by her health care, walking home from bingo with Father Steve. They say there's no such thing as free health care, and with all these new taxes, I believe she'd been drinking too much, and sure, and we begged her not to go. HHS cut off her medication. She said, I'll be okay, and stumbled out into the snow. When they found her Tuesday morning, she was in the alley, laid out flat. There were footprints on her forehead, and a bunch of blue dog paw marks on her back. Grandma got
okay, I gotta tell you that we have the pleasure of watching the video that goes along with the music that Bob picks. It
the
is
words
hysterical.
Are fun. You should watch the video.
Okay, so Bob, who is it?
You know, I don't actually know who it is. It's the Grandma Got Run Over by Her Healthcare video on YouTube.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Yeah, just go to YouTube and search
it.
Grandma Got Run Over by Her Healthcare.
So we are with Senator Doug LaMalfa. We are talking about universal healthcare, both federally and with the state of California. And I do want to emphasize that we are not opposed to some government. I mean, it does take some government to run a civil society, but we're talking about overreach. And as you all know, the tenets
we're,
of this
we're talking
show,
about having our hand held.
Yeah.
We don't like that part.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we do need limited government. We just don't need total government. So I just wanted to make that point.
Okay, so we had a lady call during the break, and she basically wanted to ask what we all thought was going to happen. You know, if the Supreme Court rules that Obamacare is constitutional, she goes, you know, I'm already seeing groups forming and, you know, people protesting and things like that. She goes, what do you think is going to happen?
What do you think, Doug?
So what do you think, boss?
Well, it's... When it fully kicks in 2014, and you know, see pieces of it starting to come in now, but and the state reacting to it as if it's already in place with legislation locally, then we'll have to live with the effects. And if the prognosticators on the anti-Obamacare are correct, then how long till it collapses? And at what point does that make the excuse for government to come in and assume more powers or say, well, we have to make this work. It's the mandate. So we're just going to have to start helping ourselves more into the treasury of individuals. And but when it collapses on its own because the numbers don't work in just a few short years, will government then unentrench that we found it hasn't worked, or just keep trying to make more laws and more assessments, more whatever. I think what's going to happen with the Supreme Court is that it'll be yet another close call. You have the four justices that are designated, you know, as the liberal ones, and then you have five that are generally on the lean the conservative side. Really, there's four. Then you have Justice Anthony Kennedy, who's always that swing guy there. And that's the guy, once again, on a key decision everyone's going to be watching. So, you know, Justice Thomas, I think, is going to be solid on that. Scalia, I think some might be wondering about Roberts a little bit. But it usually comes down to Kennedy on this thing, and that's what they're going to be contemplating in June, or by June. I think the arguments really are up this week. 6 hours of testimony is what I understand this coming week, and so it'll be very interesting to watch the Supreme Court and whatever is those that are monitoring it, reporting on it, what you hear being argued. So the court sometimes, most times they kind of want to err on the side of what has been legislated, but they overturn things all the time that frustrate, I think, conservative thinking. And so
we're due.
They better have the guts to overturn this, because I don't see how this at all fits with what's constitutional. And, man, you see some gems being told by Mrs. Pelosi going back to saying, oh, the founders would want this Obamacare, somehow basing it on the First Amendment or something. It's just, it's amazing how they could stand there and do the Jedi mind trick, or try to the whole U.S. Viewing audience on this stuff. And so,
yeah, and somehow we're immune to it because we don't buy it for a second. Tell me this, when you talk to people, I mean, obviously, you know, you're running for Congress, so you know, speak to people back in Washington, D.C. and whatnot. What's the prevailing sentiment back there? What do people think?
On how it's going to do in the court, or just in general, what they feel about it?
Both.
I think it's a pretty pretty much a consensus that it's going to be a close call on that. I mean, you could ask one person who's leans conservative that felt the court was going to uphold it, and others think it isn't. So, you know, it's kind of a pick 'em situation, and I hope there's some very, very persuasive folks on the side of liberty that are going to be in that courtroom those 6 hours or whatever it ends up being this week. But this does not square with what the founders had in mind, having that individual mandate, which is really the linchpin. So the court's going to be looking at is the biggest part, can you force somebody to purchase something? Can you force somebody to purchase a product with their what they've earned under the individual mandate that would not otherwise be optional? You know, someone might say, well, you're required to buy insurance to drive a car. Well, people say, well, yes, you don't have to drive a car. Yes, driving is a privilege. And, you know, I'm not sure how I feel about those things, but there's something once removed about the insurance mandate on an automobile versus anybody who exists and breathes would have to be in, you know, at least with the car situation, you can decide maybe, well, I'm just going to ride my horse and buggy. You know, I mean, there's a way out of it, perhaps. But this one, there's no way out. So if the individual mandate goes down, then the rest of the House of Cards completely collapses at that moment on the whole Obamacare thing.
Well, you know, Doug, I think that the magnitude of this that some people may not grasp is once this thing is in full swing, if it goes that far, the consequences of it and the damage that it will do, I mean, it literally will take generations.
Well, it'll be like unraveling, you know.
There's no turning back.
It'll be like a snag in a fishing line of epic proportion. I mean, you just never get it unwrapped. But, you know.
Well, once it becomes an entitlement and people are used to
receiving
it,
too.
You see that with any other type of entitlement.
Yeah.
But when the state or somebody tries to trim back the level of it because the numbers are blowing up on Medi-Cal or other things, the court steps in and says, no, you have to provide this. Mm-hmm. You know, state legislature, you have to continue to provide it at whatever level. It becomes an entitlement that is now court protected. And so even if we can all see the thing after just 2 or 3 years, you have a group of people that are now used to it, that are enrolled in it, and are supposedly depending on it, then you have legal precedent that exists, and you don't repeal that under the types of courts we have now, the types of judges that are appointed by people that believe in an activist court.
People that shouldn't be appointing judges?
Huh?
Yeah, people who shouldn't be appointing judges?
Well, that's why these elections are important. You know, we can't say it enough.
Yeah.
Who you appoint as your executive, the governor or the president, and makes all these decisions is critical as to what you're going to be living with for the next generation. We only have the Ninth Circus Court of appeals there that it's a complete byproduct of that. They get overruled all the time, but you know they keep sticking liberal justices on there. And,
yeah, they don't seem to be noticing there's a little trend.
They get overruled anyway, even though after it's a kangaroo court.
So. All right, we have Horse Creek Mike on the line, who is our captive. Mike, you'll have to be our captive for 2 more minutes. You will be the first thing we come back to when we finish our commercial break. Thank our advertisers. You're listening to We the People Radio here at KCNR 1460 AM, the home of Free Fire Media.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
If your tax advisor tells you your legal deductions are red flags, it's time for North State Consultants in Reading. Our team specializes in reducing your tax liability using IRS policies and administrative law. As the most aggressive and qualified tax preparation and audit litigation specialists in the business, we offer tax and trust assistance with audits, late filings, overdue taxes, and more. For more information, visit our website at northstateconsultants.com.
Hear us streaming 24/7 on KCNR1460.com.
Hey, like a surgeon, cutting for the very first time. Like a surgeon,
sing it, Weird Al.
Organ transplants are my line. Better give me all your gossamers. This patient's fading fast. Have said
don't know how long he lasts.
I gotta tell you,
let me see.
We do serious topics on this show, but it is such a blast. I wish you could be here.
Oh, whoops.
Sunday mornings are like no Sunday mornings.
On the phone line.
No Sunday mornings you have ever known.
It's Weird Al running the phone line.
So we are, we've got Mike on the phone, I believe.
We don't.
Did he lose?
We have something bad.
Gone. Mike's gone.
We may have lost both of them. Let me...
We hung up on everyone.
Are you there,
why
Senator?
Why don't you vamp for a moment while I figure this out?
Does that mean just talk endlessly about nothing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nice,
okay.
I like it.
We're now entering the Seinfeld phase.
Time to talk endlessly about nothing. Oh, my gosh. Well, what was it that was... Oh, you know what? I did actually have a serious thought. I know it doesn't happen often. I should have written it down. I was thinking about it, though, that if this particular part, you know, if this law, mm-hmm. trying to force everybody to buy health insurance, mm-hmm. if it wasn't such a big deal, like, what if they tried to make everybody buy something that was going to be like $10 a year?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there would have been massive outrage.
Right.
And so there would that piece of have slid in, and they could have, you know, done something mm-hmm. with Obamacare, you know? It would have just come in under the radar. But this is too much too soon.
Yeah, they didn't try to boil...
We kind of lucked out in
a way. They didn't try to boil the frog slowly. They said, let's just throw the frog into boiling water.
Well, it's kind of like, okay, we'll just make everybody do it. And I think they actually, in a delusional sort of way, thought they actually could make everybody do something and that we'd fall for it.
Number one... Totally the government stupid. Has no place telling you what you should buy in the private market. Bottom line, I don't care if it's $10. Number two, once you open this door, it's a free-for-all.
Exactly. That's why I said if they tried to make everybody spend a small amount of money every year, you probably wouldn't have had massive outrage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I have to thank them for that because they have brought the conservatives out of hiding.
Oh, yeah. People just have freaked out.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah.
I'm glad. I mean, sometimes it takes something big. You know, I always go back to the Patriot Act. You know, most of us didn't really see mm-hmm. what the Patriot Act mm-hmm. was about when it passed. You know, we were still kind of shell-shocked with the 9/11 deal. And everybody kind of, it's probably idea.
Like they
didn't
say,
think about it.
Never let a good crisis go to waste.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a great time to
I'm pleased to report we lost both of them, but we have both of them back now.
Well, that was fantastic.
Hey, Mike, are you in there?
I'm here.
What say you?
Sing it, Mike.
Well, I've got an interesting perspective on some of this, in as much as my grandfather was a physician and my father was a physician.
Well, who knew?
And back in, I guess it was around 77, 76, when my father retired from the Navy, and he looked at hanging out a shingle and becoming a private doctor. And he found that the cost of malpractice insurance was going to eat every bit of any profit that he thought he might get. And so he'd basically be working for free. Okay, now, the point to this is that we need tort reform. Needed desperately.
Good point. We haven't talked about that yet.
Yeah, funny how that doesn't come up.
You know, the cost of our health care, we all argue when a drug company makes a new drug and goes through the cost of testing and all that mess, they have a right to be compensated for their efforts. And doctors have a right to be compensated for their education and time and experience. But when fully half of their costs that they charge us go to insurance, it makes it unreasonable. And I don't understand why we aren't addressing this from the root cause, both in the state and in the federal government. We've been calling for tort reform for years. Why can't we get that even thought of?
Okay, back to you, Doug.
earlier, and with the constraints of time on the radio here, I was talking in the generality. What are the things government can do to curtail costs? And that is one of the main areas there. Doctors have to do defensive medicine. They have to order tests for every conceivable thing in the world so they don't have somebody sue them for using the discretion, like, well, I believe it's this, and so let's just do tests for this. They just order, you know, MRIs for everyone, right? So that's one of the things that drives costs, you're having to buy prohibitive levels of insurance, as you're mentioning, because you're going to have some attorney running around looking for a way to get a payday out of it instead of doctors that are reasonably diagnosing what they think is going on. And so you apply it to anything else in society there. Reasonableness is taken away with the threat of litigation when, you know, our folks at regulatory agencies say, well, we better not issue this water permit or this timber permit because the environmentalist movement will sue us, so we're just going to go ahead and make the people suffer by a much more expensive EIR process. You know, it applies everywhere. So if government did things to lower the cost of doing business, like what you were talking about with your father there, he would be in the business having his own shingle hung out there to serve the public. And instead, you know, new docs, they don't really want that anymore. They would rather just work for a medical group or a health organization instead of doing that. I mean, not everyone, but that's the trend. And so we're taking choices off the table of what people want to do for their living and who the people are going to receive that from, because government doesn't get its act together on tort reform. Tort reform would be a major part of helping to lower costs of delivering medical service to the public.
Well, we're having this debate, just so you guys don't miss everything. We're having this debate on the chat room about George Soros, and they're talking about what, you know, the fact that he's, my dad had put a note in here and said that the reason they went too far too fast, and the way that the reason they're skipping over some you know they're not using like a nice on ramp to bring this up, is because Soros is getting old and he wants it done now. And then
attack.
Nice timing there, guy.
Good one. We were due. I didn't see you cue that up. We were due for that. So the whole conversation here on the chat room is whether George Soros was breast or bottle fed, and my dad actually piped back in. Soros didn't have a mother. had to be bottle fed. I'm like, now do you see why I'm like this?
Born of a jackal or something.
Something like that.
I better bail here. So
okay. Thank you, Senator.
I think the chat room is making him nervous.
Our chat room's out of hand again.
Church back in, so we got to get.
Okay, cool.
Thanks a lot.
Good to hear from you.
Keep up the good fight. Hey,
if he's Catholic, you can bet he's going to confession.
He's not, but I am. So of course, you know, I'll do that for us. I'll have to punch the ticket for the team, unless my dad can get to church before me. He's in Nevada. Hey, is Mike still on there? We never said goodbye to him. We just silenced him.
Mike, are you still there?
I hear him laughing, yeah. So I think he's still there.
Mike's like, hello, hello.
Oh man! So you know, even up there in the middle of nowhere where you live, which is just a really great place, you guys are going to get hit with all this. What most of the talk up there is a lot of land use issues. Do you hear much about Obamacare up there?
Yeah, we do. It's in the back of all our minds, and it's kind of one of those overriding concerns that, but you know, it's there again. When you're up to your ass in alligators, it's difficult to remember that the object was to drain the swamp. And so we tend to get distracted by what's in front of us immediately. You know, we're still reacting in many ways that rather than being proactive, you know. When there's somebody shooting at you, you take immediate cover and worry about the guy around the corner till tomorrow.
Yeah, if you're halfway smart.
Well,
oh.
Yeah, but no, I look at healthcare costs as an example. Recently, the VA decided that I had to pay my copay. And okay, so I decided I was going to go shop for my medications on the open market.
Uh-oh, we got 30 seconds left.
We're going to have to find out more about that next time.
Thanks, okay. Mike. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, everybody.
Just say no to Obamacare. It's bad for you.
We will be back next week with Michael Shaw from Freedom Advocates. We'll be talking about Agenda 21 and hopefully specific on water issues. So we'll meet you next week.
They're big.
WeThePeopleRadio.us.
And thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Elizabeth. Doug Shulman is up next. Here at KCNR Shasta Redding, this has been We the People.